Hey everyone, welcome to The Final Four Is Not on the Schedule. I'm your host Eric, alongside with expert analyst Rod. Thanks for joining us on the best MSU basketball podcast featuring an in-depth recruiting, game matchup, and post-game analysis. We dive deep to give you the best tools to enjoy the Spartans and impress your friends and family. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod. We're here to talk about the Iowa Hawkeyes. They visit the Breslin Center on Thursday night. And before we start, I just want to go over a couple things, clean up some business here. The first is, I released the Norman interview and realized that the audio version, if you listen to it, you're like, boy, that seems sort of familiar. That almost sounds like his recruitment in the summer. That's because I put the wrong audio in. And so the interview is now there. If you re-download that, you can listen to it. It's about 20 or so minutes, or you can watch online on our YouTube channel. If you have not had the opportunity to, you can go over, sign up for that, and you can watch the interview with him. And he's hilarious. It's a great interview. I mean, I think we've mentioned this a number of times in social media and also on this podcast. He's a guy you are going to really cheer for. You're going to love watching him play. I mean, the guy broke his hand chasing after a ball, right? I mean, I don't think you can ask for much more of that, except for him to stay healthy. So I would encourage you to go check that out. Also, you know, we took on sponsor Nudge Printing, and they've been great. And we've had a great response. And so really, thanks so much to all you guys. I mean, it's a great product, and so it's not hard to sell it in that sense. And they, you know, provide great apparel. But we talked to Gabe and Brittany, and they've been very, very happy with the response, you guys supporting them, who support us. And so that's really means a lot to us. And so we're very excited to have them on as partners for our show and the support they offer for us. You know, speaking of Nudge Printing, you can go to nudgeprinting.com, and their listeners of this show get 20% off their orders by just entering the code FINAL4 at checkout. They have all kinds of things. I mean, I've got a really nice sweatshirt that's soft. It's lightweight, and so it's not as bulky as like lots of sweatshirts. And so their t-shirts are also really good. It turns out the t-shirts that we printed through a different printer are pretty much the same brand. It's a little bit different makeup, but essentially they're nice, soft, high quality t-shirts, screen printed. So they're very durable, and I think you'll be very happy with them. And I think I mentioned this before with our t-shirts, everyone in my family got one, and they're like, oh, these are really nice. Because that's not usually the t-shirts our family buys. We kind of, I guess, buy cheap ones, not realizing they're different qualities and brands. And so anyway, you'll feel the same way with the Nudge Printing ones. And so I'd encourage you to check out their stuff. Even if you're not just you're looking for stuff for non-Spartan fans, they got 60 schools there. Most of the schools in Michigan outside of the one in Ann Arbor. And they have all kinds of just some random schools too. Like, you know, the Naval Academy, they've got Florida Gulf Coast and a number of others and Texas schools and such and Baylor and stuff. So check out their stuff. They got really cool decals. I've got one on my computer, and it's like a dunking Sparty with a basketball, like a gruff Sparty. And that's one I think we've looked at before, and I don't know when it's from, but I think it's an old logo that they've gotten license for all the vintage stuff, and they've got license for other things like Tuck Cumming and stuff like that. So if you want to get that sort of stuff, you can check it out. They've had 600 five-star reviews. So great product, great company, MSU alum, all made in Michigan. So you can't go wrong. So again, that's at nudgeprinting.com, and enter code FINAL4 at checkout for 20% off discount. All right. Now we need to talk about Iowa. Now, as listeners of the show who've been around a while and may recall from the preseason, I'm a graduate from Iowa for medical school. So Iowa is my number two team in the Big Ten. And Rod is harboring a grudge against Iowa from when he was back in high school. And so they are the number 13 team in the Big Ten. And so we should be well balanced in the show, right?
Yeah. I have to think about it. Do I dislike it? It depends on the year. And honestly, the incident that I had was at a football game. So, but yeah, now that said, there's a gigantic Grand Canyon sized gulf between Iowa, if they are at 13, and right, the school, yeah, that's at 14. So, There's that. But I actually, look, I have to say at the outset, Fran McCaffrey doesn't cheat, to my knowledge. Seems like he has good relationships with his players. In fact, I think if you look at it,
not
they haven't
ones
had
kind of
a ton
to,
of guys
maybe,
transfer
right?
out of that program. You know, there's certainly, yeah, there's certainly other schools that have a lot more turnover. And he's also had guys come back for fifth years when, you know, they could have opted to go elsewhere. I mean, last year that was the case with Bohannon. You know, so he must be doing something right. I don't like his approach to the game in the sense that he doesn't care about defense, really. I find wanting, but you know, they run, they play a fast paced game, which I like. They do try, at least generally speaking, to be an effective rebounding team. And, you know, I have to give him his due. Iowa went through a really bad period for about, I would say, you know, depending upon how you measure it, at least 12, 13 years, maybe even slightly longer, where, you know, the end of the Tom Davis era was not great. Steve Alford's time had a lot of promise, and then ultimately more disappointment than actual delivery. The Todd Licklider era was shockingly bad.
Yes.
And so you have to give McCaffrey his due. What he's managed to do at Iowa is bring them back to a level where they are more often than not, far more often than not, actually, an NCAA tournament worthy team. They haven't really been a legit Big Ten title contender. I mean, I guess you could have called them that a couple of years ago during the COVID year, Luca Garza's senior year, but I never felt they were a legitimate title contender, and they didn't win it in the end. They haven't really had any kind of NCAA tournament success, but, you know, just making the tournament normally, far more often than not, is an accomplishment, I think, at Iowa, because it's not a program for whom there are obvious reasons why they should be ultra, ultra successful.
Right.
Right. That the state does not produce a boatload of talent. And oftentimes when they do produce a really, really good player, that player goes out of state. That's happened many, many times. They've lost kids to Kansas, to Carolina, even to Iowa State, you know? So there's not a lot of reason why Iowa should be any different fundamentally than, say, Nebraska in basketball. Not much of a reason. And I think there are arguments why schools like Minnesota, Wisconsin, et cetera, should be better. But yet he's managed to pull it off. And you got to give him his due for at least making them a very competitive, and I would say good program. Probably not very good, certainly not excellent, but a good program. And doing it, as I say, by all accounts, everything I've ever heard, he's done it cleanly. You know, I just, sometimes he's had a few guys, you know, Bohannon being one, where I didn't really love the attitude. And then of course there's Fran's famous sideline meltdowns, which to me are more entertaining than anything else. I mean, people around the league, Mike Woodson, dude, just seem to be on the war path about it. But I find it entertaining because usually it's a sign things are going really badly for Iowa. So I love the Franometer. You know,
that FranCon. Yeah.
To me, that's probably the greatest Big Ten basketball related meme of all time. I don't. The only one that comes close to me were the there's a variety of Ted Valentine, the old, not Ted Valentine. I'm sorry, Ed Hightower, the old Ed Hightower memes where they got Ed Hightower like in a Star Wars scene, and you know, for a variety. It's the only one that comes close. But to me, Fran Khan is the king.
Yeah, and I would only add that the one thing that Fran McCaffrey cheats at is death. You'd think for sure he'd have blown an aneurysm by now.
Yeah. But
I think we can safely say he has no aneurysms, because if he did, they would certainly have caused a brain bleed by now.
It's a good point, man. And that gets harder to withstand the older you get, I think. I know that's the case for me. If you get really mad and you're yelling, it's a lot harder to take than when you were 20. Yet he keeps on going. So, the other thing about him too, this is interesting, to me at least, in comparison to some other guys around with hot tempers, I can think of, and I talked about this on the Spartan Mag Board earlier this year, you know, Danny Hurley is a guy that I've seen on multiple occasions, including it's Michigan State last year, melt down and then not be able to compose himself.
Yeah.
Let it affect the way he was actually coaching his team. He spent in a tight game against Michigan State last season, late. The game was right there to be won by either side. He spent an entire time out haranguing the officials rather than getting back into his own huddle. And his team faded. Michigan State won that game. You know, Tom Izzo's got a legendarily volcanic temper at times with officiating, but do you ever see a situation where you feel like he lets that take him out of the game? I can't recall one. And I think Fran, for the most part too, I've observed that he has these epic meltdowns, but I don't feel like it costs him possessions or games. You know, he seems to be able to get it back together enough, which then makes you wonder how much of it is real and how much of it is theater.
I think it's real.
I do too, but it at least occurs to me when you could pull it back that quickly. Now, I will say I have heard anecdotally, and you might have more insight in this than I do, I don't know. I have heard anecdotally that his wife absolutely blows him away.
Yes. She's been thrown out of games at Siena when she was listening.
Okay.
She was thrown out of arena. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it was at Siena or at the visiting arenas, but she's been thrown out of games, which even if you've been thrown out of one game.
Isn't it remarkable that his kids aren't worse?
Well, I mean, there are stories because, of course, they grew up in Iowa City when they were in, you know, high school and probably even middle school. I'm not sure. And there are stories about, I don't know. I know about Connor. I don't know about Patrick. And they do seem like different kids.
Yes.
To me.
I would say Patrick Connor seems calmer.
Connor is a fiery young man, and he was more so in high school. And he was, I guess, you know, I've talked to people who were like announcers for games and like for the radio or something, or they were, it was colorful language is not unique to just Fran and his wife, apparently. So
no, I believe that, but I just mean, you would think actually playing, if you come from that kind of temperament, it would be even worse. You know, you'd be getting into, you know, Hunter Dickinson-esque antics, you know, or worse.
Yeah.
And I haven't really seen him go that ballistic. I actually felt Bohannon was a more obnoxious player than he is.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean,
Bohannon certainly has run his mouth off the court far more.
Yeah, no question. I think this, and this may be an may sort of, I guess, put a bow on your comments about Fran and his ability to sort of have, you know, strategically, you know, you're angry, but he can strategically use it to motivate his team. I think we see Izzo, lots of coaches do that. I mean, all the time, right? You get the technical to kind of get refs' attention, get your team's attention, whatever. And I think probably it's probably safe to say that Connor is the same way and that he knows how to channel it or control it when it needs to be controlled. I don't, right. And I don't know outside of later. I just know he had pretty, notorious temper when he was playing in high school, but that may have changed. It certainly does. I mean, he's at least doesn't, it doesn't let him, it doesn't seem to bleed over into his game negatively as far as I can tell. And that's a credit to him. And you know, you can use all sorts of emotions either to your detriment or to your advantage. And I think they probably both those guys use it to their advantage in some respects, right?
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Iowa. Iowa's 12-7. They're 4-4 in the Big Ten. They're 35th overall in the KenPom rankings. Their offense, per usual, is number 5 in the nation in efficiency. Their defense, not so good, 145th, which is kind of typical. So on offense, they're really good in not turning the ball over and valuing the possessions. They're 4th in turnover percentage. And they're pretty good in everything else. They shoot 34.4% from 3, which is 141st ranking, which is not great, but I think they've been better of late. They're 105th from 2, and then they're 76th in offensive rebounding percentage. They don't get to the line a ton, 99th in free throw attempts, and they're 73.4% when they get there, so a pretty good shooting show. So the big problem, of course, with them is on defensive end. They're, for even a Fran McCaffrey-level defense, they're pretty bad. The third worst in his stay. They're 216th against twos, 205th against threes. They don't give up a whole lot of offensive rebounds. So, well, I guess they are because they're 161st in defensive rebounds.
Yeah, that's not good.
They don't force a lot of turnovers, which is a little unusual for this team compared to last year. Last season, I think they're much better at turnovers. But I do think that's somewhat related to the fact they only have one Murray as opposed to two. They don't foul, so they hardly ever foul. They're number 3 in the nation in fouling, and they play at a pretty fast pace. Like you mentioned earlier, they tend to run. They like to get out and break and transition. They're 54th in pace of play, which is pretty fast for the Big Ten. Big Ten doesn't generally be that, is not the fastest of conferences.
Yeah, and you know, teams, it's similar to when teams face Michigan State, historically at least. You know, they know Michigan State is going to look to push. And so Big Ten teams will do everything they can to limit that. But, you know, I think one of the differences is if Iowa historically, if they get the ball into the front court and they're forced to play a half court game, that's not going to actually slow their pace down that much because they're much more prone than Michigan State is to take quick shots if yes. They're in a half court game, you know, so that's what keeps their pace up. But they do like to run. Look, it's a different team than they've had the last, you know, two, three seasons. Offensively, they're not a very good shooting team. I mean, this is not the Iowa teams that we've seen the last few years where they had multiple guys that just can kill you. You know, if you think about their team 2 years ago, where you had Luca Garza, who had become a very good shooter. You had Bohannon. You had C.J. Frederick. You had Weisskamp. I mean, they just all up and down the lineup. They had guys that could just bust you from deep. They don't have that with this team. They're okay. They're not horrendous, but they're not great. What's keeping their offense overall where it is the fact that they just do not give the ball away. They don't make mistakes. So come hell or high water, Iowa's going to get a scoring attempt where they have the ball. You know, that's what their seasonal profile tells you. And the fact that they're not terrible in any area. They're mediocre in a lot of them offensively, but they're not awful. So it's not offsetting that really, really strong performance handling the ball, not giving it away. Defensively, you know, every year on this podcast, when these games come around against this team, we talk about how awful they are defensively, but this is really above and beyond. I mean, Fran McCaffrey's been there, I think, like 12 or 13 years now.
Yeah,
long time. This is on track to be the third worst defensive team he's had. Think about what that means. Because they've had some really bad defensive teams. This one is beyond. And I think, look, I mean, if you just say it, they're not gifted in terms of athletes, you know? So you start with that. But then beyond that, there's just no culture of defense, you know? I would take Fran McCaffrey a little more seriously. And honestly, if he was honest with himself, I think he would look at doing this. He really ought to do what John Beilein did. He ought to admit defeat and just admit to himself, I can't fix this. I have my principles that I believe in on offense, and we're never going to give those up. But we've got to start checking better if we want to contend for anything meaningful. And I've got to bring in somebody on the staff who can teach that and can teach it in a way that doesn't require me to change what I look for on offense, which is important. You know, if you look back at John Beilein's teams, when they made that switch, they didn't really change anything offensively. They didn't change the kind of players that they were recruiting. Beilein still emphasized the same things. And I think you can do that and yet find a scheme that will work with those players and teach it effectively. That's what had been missing at Michigan. And it changed. And the last like 4 years or so that he was there, they were an outstanding defensive team, not just decent. They were really, really good. I think that McCaffrey would be well-served to think about doing something similar, but I have no idea whether that's ever going to happen. I mean, it's tough to get some of these guys to change the way they see things, but if Iowa was even an average Big Ten defensive team, say in the 50s or 60s, how many more wins would they have? Yeah, and not just this year, but just generally.
Sure.
It's hard to win big. You can win some, but it's hard to win big in the Big Ten if you can't stop people. I mean, look at the difference between this Purdue team and last season's Purdue team. I would take last season's Purdue team on a man-by-man, quote-unquote, talent basis every day of the week. But so far, at least, this year's Purdue team is faring better. Now, some of that is maybe the league isn't quite as good at the top. You know, there are other considerations. But I would submit the most important thing is Purdue has gotten back to playing Purdue defense, which they did not do last year. So if you're not going to go out and guard people, you are going to have a hard time winning Big Ten championships or even being in serious contention for them. You'll also have a hard time going all that deep in March, in my opinion. It is hard, 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 hard.
Well, we see this all the time, right? You see, when you have a team that is one-dimensional in the sense that you're good only on one end of the court and you're really bad in the other. We see the same thing with Rutgers, right? We say defensively, they're solid, you know, they're big, whatever, but they can't shoot. And so, you know, you get all the stops you want, but if you can't ever score the ball, you're not going to win.
Right.
And likewise for Iowa, you know, what if you don't score at quite the pace? Well, now you're suddenly in a conundrum because you can't ever stop someone. And so it just, you know, in the small margins that you have for Big Ten games, it makes a difference, right?
It prevents you, in my view, from having and finding consistency. It essentially dooms you to this bit of a roller coaster ride where you're going to have nights where your offense is good enough and it'll get the job done. But you are going to have other nights where you're playing a team that can hold you down a bit, either because they're that good defensively or you're just off your shooting touches. I mean, I was watching Penn State and Rutgers tonight before we started recording. Penn State's a great three-point shooting team. It's a key to their success this year. When I turned the game off, I think they were 3 for 20 from three. It happens, you know?
Yeah.
It even opened. Rutgers is a good defense, really good defensive team, but even open shots, they just weren't falling. That happens. So if you're just good offensively, you're going to have nights where you're not up to your usual standard. And then if you consistently can't guard people, you've got no chance to sustain anything. And I think that's why you typically see Iowa as a program that, like, you know, I would say most years, the ceiling over there is going to be like 12-8.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. They're just never going to be able to have enough consistency because of the defense to get into an area where they could truly think about contending. And again, going back to what we were talking about at the outset, if that's all you want, that's fine. And that might be where it's certain. Look, I'm not suggesting the Iowa administration should be looking to get rid of Fran McCaffrey, far from it. they've seen it can be a lot worse, a lot worse.
Yeah, right.
But if I were an Iowa fan, it would be frustrating to me that after more than a decade in charge and a lot of tournament bids during that period, that my program was never seriously in the hunt for a Big Ten championship, never made like a good second weekend run even, that those yeah. things just don't ever happen. That would frustrate me. Like even Purdue, where you can bag on Matt Painter for the lack of March success, his teams have won enough Big Ten titles that you could say, okay, one of these years they're going to have a breakthrough. You know, but Iowa doesn't even have that to fall back on. It would be very frustrating. I would almost equate it to if you were a fan of an NBA team, let's say, that's a consistent playoff participant, but never seriously in the conversation to get to the finals. You know, that's kind of what Iowa is, right? They're an eternal sixth or seventh seed in the NBA playoffs.
Yep. And I would say, you know, to your point about Iowa, even when they had a super elite offense, you know, they bust through that ceiling of 12 wins, but they're not getting 16, right? So they're just getting a couple more. Yeah.
That's the rare season like they had 2 years ago where their offensive talent was just overwhelming. They had everything. They could kill you from three. They had the best low post player in America. They ran. They didn't turn the ball over. I mean, they really did everything. They offensive rebounded. There wasn't an area they were weak in, and yet no Big Ten title and not even seriously in it at the end.
Yeah. Well, they've an interesting season. They started out 0-3 in the Big Ten. They then ran off four in a row after Patrick McCaffrey, the youngest son for Fran McCaffrey, left the team, or at least took a pause for some mental health issues. He said it was anxiety. And they most recently went to Ohio State, which you predicted, and got beaten. And what uncharacteristically for them, they had, I want to say, seven turnovers in the first 10 minutes of that game, which is again, very unusual for them. And that was sort of spelled their doom. They just trying to play catch up most of the game, even though they just couldn't handle Ohio State. And then, I guess the one question I have for you is clearly Fran McCaffrey is a good offensive coach. What is it about his offense, or is it the types of players or the way they run things that makes him so effective offensively year after year, despite having, you know, different players? It's not like relying on a one and done guy who suddenly boosts their numbers. There's clearly a good system that works. And how is that different from, say, Michigan State?
I think somewhat similarly, although they don't run exactly the same stuff, but somewhat similarly to John Beilein and Tom Izzo too, every coach tries to recruit to what they want to do. Sure. And so I have to think that Fran McCaffrey recruits guys who fit his thing. So he recruits guards that are skilled. They have ball skills, meaning they can shoot the ball well, they pass the ball well, they handle the ball well, they don't commit, they don't make a lot of mistakes. And then after that, I have to believe, you know, and this is something that, again, I think especially casual fans don't realize. I suspect that people who aren't really tuned in think that coaches have unlimited amounts of time to work their teams. It's right. Quite the contrary. You have very fixed, limited periods of time, both during the season and off season, when you can practice. And so what you choose to do with that limited amount of time you get is going to vary wildly from coach to coach. Tends to be the things that they emphasize, right? So I have to believe that Fran McCaffrey, like some other guys, like a John Beilein, John Beilein's thing for years and years was he really just emphasized with repetition what he wanted from his players offensively, how to read, you know, because he kind of got to a read-react thing that he was running, how to make proper reads, make good decisions, obviously stay sharp as shooters, work on their passing, those types of things. And so I have to believe Fran McCaffrey It's not an accident where you see this year after year after year after year with different players. You know, it's what's emphasized. And that's why I was saying, I think it would behoove him to think about bringing in someone on his staff who comes from a defensive background and can teach that. You know, Michigan did it first for, I think, a year with Billy Donlin. And then when he left to go to Northwestern, they brought in Luke Yaklich, and they actually got even a little better. So that was two guys that John Beilein was able to get past whatever issues he might have had and say, I got to bring in somebody who can effectively teach and implement what we do at this end to give us a better chance of being a consistent contender. And it worked. And I think that would help Fran McCaffrey, because when I look at Iowa, I see a program that emphasizes one end of the court pretty clearly in what they do, in how they identify players. Like, I don't think Fran McCaffrey is bothered by seeing a high school player who doesn't guard well.
Right.
You know, sure. And might not even have the physical tools to be, you know, an obvious guy who could improve if that player has sufficient ball skills for him to like him offensively. I think he makes those choices. And, you know, and then when you add to it that there just isn't much improving that's done in their program on that end, well, this is what you get, whatever they are, 145th in the nation in defensive efficiency. I mean, that is, for a Big Ten program, that is rock bottom of the barrel. I mean, you just...
You're a bit worse than almost half the other teams in the country. And those include, like, you know, Montana State.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's awful. It's awful.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about starters for Iowa. And actually, I think this kind of ties in real well to what you were just talking about. So Connor McCaffrey, 6'6" senior, doesn't make many mistakes. He was a starter 2 years ago and lost a starting job last year. But 2 years ago, he was an amazing feeder, post feeder for Luca Garza. He could get the ball to him. And I mean, it was incredible, which is why they had to have him on the court, because he just fed that guy and probably had a million assists that season. He still leads the team in assists this year at 51, just 17 turnovers. He's averaging 7.7 points a game on 45, 38, and 94 shooting. And because of his size and just activity, he gets 3.3 rebounds a game. He's a testament to your point that there's a guy who couldn't hit the, you know, a famous Iowa expression, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn his first year or two at Iowa. He was miserable from outside, and now he's almost a 40% shooter from outside. He's really improved his offensive game, but his defensive game hasn't really changed much, aside from, I think, his size lends him to get some, make some plays from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, the improvement's clear on the – he's always been a good decision maker. I would submit that for as good as Iowa is offensively, it's been a long time. I mean, I would make an argument that maybe the most dynamic point guard they've had during his time there might have been Sapp Clemens, a kid from Sexton, who was a teammate of Denzel Valentine and Bryn Forbes. And he wasn't that dynamic a player. But that my point is, for as good as McCaffrey is in that area, imagine if he was able to create more. He really doesn't create much because he's not a gifted enough athlete. He doesn't penetrate particularly well. You know, he's become a good shooter, but he's not a guy who really distorts your defense trying to deal with him. I had this conversation today on the Spartan Mag board. Someone pointed out that Trey Holloman has the best assist to turnover ratio of anyone in the Big Ten who's playing at least 10 minutes a game. It's really right. Good. It's like 4 and change.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. And it's no knock on him. He's a freshman. For him to show the maturity to play that way and not make mistakes is great, but he's not going to break through to the net. I would like to see that number come down a bit, because if it comes down a bit, it's probably going to tell me that he's trying to be more dynamic. He's trying to make things happen more often and taking more chances. So that's my only criticism of Connor McCaffrey offensively, is his assist to turnover numbers have been like that his entire career. But I just wonder sometimes, man, how good could Iowa be if they actually had a Cassius Winston, an AJ Hogard, you know, somebody like that running their offense.
Yeah. And he's also the guy, if there's ever a situation where you need a long pass, like at the end of a half or something like that, he is the guy. He has amazing ability. He's a baseball player and he really can launch the ball really the full length of the court if needed. So I think they've had a couple of game winners on his passes,
he's a guy, if you're an Iowa fan, I'm sure you like him because he's reliable. You know what you're going to get from him. He doesn't make mistakes and he has certain tools that are very advantageous to have. You mentioned the ability to consistently execute post feeds. People don't think about how important that is. That is really important to have somebody who can do that when you have low post weapons, you know, the way Iowa's had. So there's things he brings to the table. It's just, as I say, he's not quite as dynamic as I would like. And defensively, he's a disaster, but aren't they all?
Yeah. But well, the next starter is Aaron Ulis, a 6'3 junior. He's averaging 5.9 points a game on 36, 30, and 79 shooting. Third in the team assists, 47, just 21 turnovers. And he's an example that dynamism that really Iowa lacks, because I think they hoped they're going to get some more dynamic guard action from him. And he really struggles to create much of anything. I'm actually sort of amazed that he's shooting 30% from three, but you know, I think it's in fairly low volume.
Yeah. You know, for those who might not realize, he's a younger brother of Tyler Ulis, who was so great at Kentucky and was actually a kid Michigan State was very interested in. This Ulis is about 5 or 6 inches taller than his brother, but he's not nearly the player. And a big part of what's missing is what we were just talking about. He's not dynamic. He's also not a consistent shooter at all. So those things have held him back.
Then it'll be Tony Perkins. Again, somewhat similar story. 6'4 junior guard. He's averaging 10.8 points a game on 40, 29, and 70 shooting. He's tied in the team with assists at 51, but he does have more turnovers, partly because he's the kind of guy who will dribble into the lane and try and make some stuff happen and get some mid-range jumpers. And he's probably the only player who really does that from a guard position for Iowa.
Yeah.
And that gets him to trouble sometimes. And he hasn't really, this is sort of what I expected. I did not expect him to make much of a jump this season, because I thought he kind of seemed like he'd kind of hit a ceiling last year. And it's pretty much been the case. He's not shooting a lot better and he's not really scoring. He's really much the same player as he was last season.
Yeah, except the shooting is slightly down across the board.
Because he's shooting more. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's probably true. But I actually did think he was set to make a jump because he was really good for them down the stretch last season. Like, he took a step up as a sophomore. Very undervalued recruit. It's funny, you know, when I was doing this, I guess I knew he was from Indiana, but I hadn't realized where he played. He played at Lawrence North, which is a public school in Indianapolis that has a very storied history. So if you play there, you know, and you are really legitimately great, you're not going to be overlooked. He was a guy who I don't believe he had an offer from either Purdue or Indiana. You know, Iowa took him and he was very much an off the radar sort of recruit. In the same class as the Murrays, who both fit that mold as well. Unlike the Murrays, he hasn't had quite that jump, but I really thought as a back end of last season, okay, this is their next guy who's going to be, you know, an effective scorer. I mean, I didn't think he was going to be a complete player by any means, but I thought he'd be better than this. And he's actually been a little worse. So I think that's maybe limited Iowa a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. All right, next player, Chris Murray. He's the identical twin to Keegan Murray, who left last year and went to the NBA at first-round draft pick. He's obviously the player's best player. He's a 6'8 junior, averaging 21.3 points a game on 51, 38, and 76 shooting, almost 9 rebounds a game. They all lead the team. He also averages a little over a block a game. He's probably a better shooter than his brother was,
yeah,
as we mentioned earlier, from... He is a mirror twin to his brother Keegan, so it means he's a lefty where Keegan was a righty. And the other interesting thing is it's incredibly common for those of you who are interested. 25% of identical twins are actually mirror twins, where it's like, you know, freckles are on the left side, right side, et cetera, those sorts of things. But anyway, he is their best player. And I think the reason that I was struggling a little bit is that although Chris is better this year than last year, Keegan's no longer there. And they really benefited from having both Murrays in the court oftentimes, both offensively and defensively.
Sure. Yeah, because Chris Murray last year was a really good role player for them. You know, and his elevation to this status is not a shocker, right? I mean, I think we saw this coming. Yeah. It was debatable as to what level he would get to, but he's pretty much maxing that out. I mean, he's, you know, he borders on being a double-double guy every night. As you said, arguably a better shooter than his brother was. And he's had no problem taking on the mantle of being the man rather than a support guy, which, you know, sometimes players struggle with that. He hasn't had that problem. He's tough. I mean, if Iowa was sitting in a better spot in the league, you could make a pretty good argument that he should be right there with Zach Edey for Big Ten Player of the Year. As it stands, I think Zach Edey's going to win it in a walk if this keeps up with Purdue. But Chris Murray has had every bit the kind of season Iowa fans could have hoped for. I mean, to me, he's 99th percentile in terms of what he's achieved versus what were reasonable expectations.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's any question. And when he has a bad game, the team is almost certainly in trouble. Like they played New York, I'm trying to remember who they played. Were they playing Duke, maybe? Yeah, I think it was Duke. Or maybe it was Kansas. I can't remember who it was. Whoever they played in New York in that one game out next to Illinois playing the other game, Murray had a bad game. He was injured. He was out for a couple games, and he came back. So when he's out, they're not the same team at all.
Sure.
Finally, Philip Rubracha, 6'9", senior. He's really been improved a lot this year. He's averaging almost 14 points a game and rebounding at 8.4 point rebounds a game. He's shooting 40, 33, and 81, leads the team with blocks. He's a guy they got in a transfer, I think, from North Dakota a couple years ago. He came in because of the departure of Garza, and then also Jack Nungy sort of surprisingly left and went to Xavier. And he's been really good, and he's a very good post player and tough guy. And I don't know, he's been a good addition for their team, which they desperately needed in that five spot.
Absolutely. Without him, they'd be in real trouble. At the five. He's gotten better. Last season, I felt like, you know, he was a guy. They needed somebody with size, and he gave them that. He was okay, you know, but he's definitely got up a level. I mean, you watch him this year, he's much more assertive offensively, and he's been really good on the boards too. So yeah, definitely. A big positive that they got him to come back for another year and that it's turned out this way.
So then we'll go to reserves. We'll start with Peyton Sanford, a 6'7 sophomore. He's basically their outside shooter. He's the kind of classic Iowa player who comes in and is just a three-point sniper. He's averaging 10 points a game at 41, 30, and 89 shooting. But recently, over the last five games, he's hit 50% of his three-point attempts and high volume, 13 of 26. And he gets a number of rebounds at a little under four a game. He was before that, before his recent five game streak, he was, I don't know, 0 for like 250 or something from three in the Big Ten. He was really, truly miserable. Every time he came out, my wife would groan. And now he shoots and you expect it to go in, which is because I think people think most recently of Bohannon. But Bohannon was he was like a guy on one night, off the other night.
And very streaky.
Sanford has definitely been more. I guess you could say he's streaky because he was off for like five games in a row. But he's also a sophomore. But he's definitely been much better and playing with a lot more confidence in the last few games. He's lethal for sure and something to worry about.
Well, I think last year I think he was a plus 40% guy. I didn't look it up, but my sense was he was much more consistent in a lesser role this year. You know, he was starting for a while. Correct me if I'm wrong.
He was. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was terrible.
And it just, that's the thing. He's shooting 30% on the year from three. And that's after a five game, 13 for 26 run. So how bad was he before that? You know, he, this was a guy who's supposed to be one of your snipers, and he was somewhere in the low 20s, you know,
yeah, but he's only shooting himself in the foot. Yeah.
He's turned that around lately. So, you would expect that you're going to see the better version of what he's been, but look, he's able to contribute a little bit as a rebounder because he doesn't have bad size, terrible defensively, but again, they all are. The bottom line with him, though, is he has to be hitting from three to really give them the kind of contributions they need out of him. He's not a guy who you look at and say, well, he does a little bit of everything. No, he's a three-point shooter. That's his role.
Yeah. I think if you look at him and compare him to Miller Kopp from Indiana, who we just faced.
That's a good one.
The one thing I would say is he has more ability to penetrate and hit shots inside than Miller Kopp, but not by a ton. So he can definitely do a little bit putting on the deck and getting to a shot, but he's still, you know, mainly an outside threat. So next we'll talk about DeSante Bowen, 6'2 freshman guard. He's played in every game this season. He's averaging 4 points a game in about 10 minutes a game. He shoots 47, 36, and 72, but that's obviously low volume with his points he averages. And he is the one who drives my wife crazy. She can't because of all the Iowa players, he has a lot of turnovers. He has almost a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, which is really bad for this team.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, right? He has not yet absorbed the Fran method in terms of being able to play effective offense without making mistakes. And, you know, everything else is okay. You know, he's shooting reasonably well, but if you can't play mistake-free basketball, it's going to be hard to get a big role. You know, and again, he's had to play, some of these guys have had to play a little more because their rotation got shortened when Patrick McCaffrey went out. But, you know, long run, I would imagine they still think he's a guy for the future at the guard spots, but he's going to have to improve that decision-making. That's for sure.
Yeah. If people remember last year's, and actually the last 2 years from Iowa, might remember Joe Toussaint. He has a little bit of Joe Toussaint in him, runs really fast and tries to make a lot of plays and ends up kind of not doing it. So maybe the same future for him. Hard to know. Next would be Josh Dix, 6'5 freshman. He's been playing quite a bit recently, a lot more than previously. He's averaging a little under 3 points a game on 40 and 45, 67 shooting. He scored 17 points in the last three games. He is a guy who is deadly outside three. He doesn't do much of anything else besides that, but he's not a guy you want to leave open.
Right. Same. Yeah. Similar thing, but less volume than Sanford. He played 31 minutes in the win over Michigan. But other than that, even during this recent stretch, you know, his playing time has increased, but it's increased to like, you know, low to mid teens in terms of number of minutes that he's seen.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you're right. Another guy that, you know, you don't really want to leave wide open.
Then we'll go to the five spot. Riley Mulvey, 6'11 sophomore. He's pretty much not playing a whole lot. He's averaging 1.2 points a game and 1.2 rebounds a game. He'll play probably about 10 minutes or so. Kind of depends. He'll spot Rabracha. He's a guy who came at the game earlier this season. We're like, who is this guy? Because Ogundele, he's sort of the backup for Rabracha.
But he's been hurt.
Mulvey.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's hurt now. So Mulvey's sort of taken over that sort of backup position. And there's not much to really talk about for him, I guess. Besides,
yeah, just a little bit of size right now.
Yeah, he's just kind of takes up some space. Finally, Patrick McCaffrey, 6'9 junior. I think it sounds like he's going to play, but it's not sure yet. He's a good player, 12.8 points a game on 40, 33, and 81 shooting, pulls down a little under 5 rebounds a game. He's a good player. He's a player that I know opposing teams are probably frustrated watching because he doesn't look like he's super athletic, yet he finds like angles and ways to sort of get in and doesn't look smooth, but scores a lot.
Look, he's a skilled guy, and the big difference between he and his brother is that he's 6'9". Rather than 6'6". So that gives him a little more in the way of offensive versatility than his older brother had. And it's why he was higher rated as a recruit. And, you know, he was like I believe he was a top 50 guy nationally. You know, so it's not a surprise that he's been effective. As you mentioned earlier on, he had some mental health issues, is apparently anxiety related. he sat out of practice, never mind games, for a couple of weeks, but he's been back at practice. He started back at practice last week, did not play in that Ohio State game, but given that they've had this additional break between that game, which was played on Saturday, and this one coming up on Thursday, I would be kind of surprised based on what I've been reading if he doesn't play. The question is how much.
Right. Yeah, whether he, I mean, because you could envision him coming back and playing his usual 27 minutes, right? I mean, if it just says, yep, I'm ready to go play again. Hard to know. And from a conditioning standpoint, et cetera, if he's ready for that as well, I suppose. All right, so we'll step away for just a moment, and then we'll come back with the Nudge Printing keys to the game. All right, the five keys to the game brought to you by Nudge Printing. We'll start with the obvious one, Chris Murray. He's their number one player. He's their scorer. He's does everything, even defensively. And, you know, what are you going to do and how are you going to defend him is the question. Like, I feel like we have this on a number of games because he plays a four. You know, is that a Joey Hauser guarding him? Is that, do you bring a Carson Cooper? Do you, I mean, there are all sorts of different ways you envision, you know, does Malik Hall play? What do you sort of, how do you see the Murray in sort of defending him?
Well, it's going to start with Joey Hauser. And the only thing you worry about there is, you know, Murray isn't just a 3-point shooter. He shoots well from out there, but he'll go off the dribble. He'll post, he'll do some things that, you know, even though Iowa as a team doesn't do a great job of drawing fouls, Murray is a tough cover. And we know how important Joey Hauser is for Michigan State. So you worry about it from that perspective. You also worry about it in terms of the energy that has to be expended because MSU needs Joey offensively as well, right? So this would be a big spot to have Malik Hall available. And we'll see if that happens. I the sense I have is that I would put it at more likely than not that he plays. But you don't know how much he's going to be able to see the floor. And, you know, you don't know for sure what level. But, boy, it would make a big difference because if you don't have him behind Joey, then it's either MSU going small, which might mean more of Pierre Brooks, but I really don't think that's an answer. More realistically, it means probably – some combination of AJ Hogard and Jaden Akins, which could work, but it's not ideal.
Yeah, you're giving up what, 4 inches at least?
Or right. Or it means more of Carson Cooper, which look, Carson Cooper's made great strides, but yeah. I don't love the idea of him having to deal with Chris Murray. And I also don't love the idea of having to play major minutes with Carson as the four. I think that would gum up things offensively for Michigan State some because you don't get that stretch element. You know, there's a lot you don't get offensively if you're playing Carson a lot at the four. So, so that's a real challenge, you know. I think it starts with Joey's got to be effective and Joey's got to be relatively foul free. If he's in foul trouble, that poses some problems. And then the other thing would be, can Malik Hall go?
Right. Yeah. And I think the other thing too about Chris Murray is he's very good at getting his misses too. And so he can be very active on the boards offensively and he can hurt you there too. So you certainly have to make sure that if he gets a shot up, he only gets one. So the number two key to the game is defensive rebounding. So we already mentioned that Iowa's a pretty good offensive rebounding team. Michigan State has had good performances until the last two games against Rutgers and then Indiana. Now, Rutgers admittedly is an outstanding offensive rebounding team, but they were able to neutralize Purdue and hold them to only a few offensive rebounds. So, you know, we've gone from 11th down to 30th in defensive rebounding just because of those two performances
over a
recently.
Week. Yeah. Well, it's because the Rutgers game was just apocalyptically bad.
Yeah. Right.
Indiana was a garden variety kind of performance, but the Rutgers game was just a disaster in that area. Look, this is not – Iowa doesn't have the personnel that they've had in recent years. They don't have a Garza out there, you know, as a dominant rebounder. This is one that if Michigan State is focused, I would like to believe they can do a decent job holding these guys down, but they need to. Because again, this is not a great shooting team. So you don't want to be giving them second and third chances at the basket.
Yeah, they'll certainly punish you if you give them enough opportunities. They're not that bad.
Right.
And I feel like in some ways, the risk here is if you want to say, well, let's say we're double or dig down at Chris Murray or something like that, I think it puts you out of position from a rebounding defensive rebounding perspective for lots of the other positions. And really with Iowa, most of their players can go in to get a rebound. Like the one I'd say, you know, looking at the starters, probably not Aaron Eula so much, but even Termey Perkins gets in there and Conn McCaffrey. So, you know, there's a lot of guys who can hit you. And so you risk trying to help too much. You might get burned.
I'd be surprised to see Michigan State treat Chris Murray that way. I mean, unless he's just laying the wood in the post. For starters, I think it's just really difficult to do with him because he can hurt you from so many different areas of the floor. You know, it's one thing if a guy's operating in the post to bring a double. It's another thing if he's 20 feet from the basket, you know. So I don't expect to see Michigan State do a lot of that unless he just absolutely leaves them no choice.
So number three key to the game is, of course, threes. Rutgers, you should say it shot the lights out. Indiana, not so much. Still, Michigan State's averaging 37.4% from behind the arc. And you suspect with Iowa's defense, there'll be plenty of opportunities, especially at home. You should get some nice home cooking with Nets. So, you know, can you do well there? And then on the other end, can you prevent Iowa from getting lots of open looks? Because they do have a lot of people who can hurt you from behind three if you make it easy.
If you make it easy. I mean, this is not the kind of shooting team that Iowa's had in recent years, but there are some guys who can hurt you. And part of it too, part of the way you evaluate Iowa is what is Sanford? Is he the guy he's been over the course of the whole season, or is the guy he's been over the last, you know, 2-3 weeks? It's very different. And that has a very different impact. It's another reason why I don't think you'll see Michigan State breeding doubles very much against Murray, because I don't think they want to let these guys have an opportunity to get on track. You don't want to give Sanford easy looks. That would be a problem. I think offensively is where I'm a little more interested in seeing what happens for MSU, because Iowa has given up a terrible percentage against. I mean, teams have just really shot it well from three against them. But one of the few things they've done, they've really done two things well defensively, and that's it. Avoiding fouling and doing a decent job at limiting three-point attempts. So we'll see if they're able to do that against Michigan State. I think a big key for MSU, absolutely, they need A.J. Hogard back and on his game. Because when A.J. Hogard is getting into the teeth of a defense, forcing it to distort, then that's when MSU's ball movement comes into play and generates wide open looks. And that's what you want to see in this game.
And then obviously you got to knock them down when you have wide open.
You got to hit them, but look, I've said this certainly many times before here. The way I evaluate the offense, at least in terms of how it's functioning, is are they generating the open looks? If they're doing that and they're just not falling, sometimes it's just one of those days.
So number four key to the game, guard play. Hogard was not really having a great game against Indiana. Walker, as we found out later, had a stomach bug, and so he didn't play. I mean, he just looked kind of tired and a little out of it. And so can Akins continue his improved play both on the defensive and offensive end to give Michigan State a significant edge here?
Yeah, I don't worry about, I said this after the Indiana game, I don't worry about A.J. Hogard and Tyson Walker. I expect they're both going to bounce back just fine in this game for different reasons, but I think they'll be really good. So then one question is, can Jaden Akins continue at the level we've seen over the last week or so, where I feel like he's really elevated his play? The second half of the Purdue game, the Rutgers game, and then the Indiana game, I think he's been really good, and you're starting to see why they felt in the preseason he was their best player. if that continues, the other two guys are going to be back where they normally are. There's a real advantage then over Iowa's guards, yeah, in my opinion. I mean, Chris Murray obviously is their best player by a long shot, and Rabracha is pretty effective at the five. But on the perimeter, Iowa's guys, at least in theory and on paper, do not match up. Michigan State has a real advantage there, and they need to exploit it. So we didn't really see that against Indiana, and that was part of the reason Michigan State lost that game, in my view.
Yeah, right. And so the last key to the game is actually not biblical. It's return of the fallen. Iowa and MSU both have front court players who've been down and out for a while. That's Patrick McCaffrey and Malik Hall. And so, you know, do they play? How much do they play? How effective are they when they come back?
Yep. Big factor. And if one team gets their guy back and the other one doesn't, that could be a serious edge. If both guys are back, if there's a difference between the levels that they're playing at, that could be a big deal. I really do kind of expect Malik Hall to play. And it seems like too. McCaffrey is going to play as well from what I've read. Yeah. So I'm not going to say it's 100% certitude, but I would certainly fall into the more likely than not category as to whether they each see the floor. And then it's just, if that's the case, then it's just down to which guy is able to contribute more. But I think both teams clearly are better for having those guys. We're talking about two very important players to their respective teams. You know, for Iowa, it makes them better offensively. It gives them another player with some size, which, you know, they don't really right now. I mean, who do they have off the bench that's a true front court player, you know, that could play the four even? Mulvey, that's it. You know, the rest of these guys,
no one.
You know, so it would be a huge advantage to have Patrick McCaffrey back, even in a reserve role, just to have a 6'9 guy who can do some different things. And Michigan State, I mean, it's obvious. Both ends, they could use what Malik Hall brings. And then this game offers a prime example of that, because he gives you another option to deal with Chris Murray. Maybe the best option, at least if he's a normal Malik, he's probably your best choice to defend him.
Yeah, I suspect if you see them play, I would guess you're going to see McCaffrey play more than Hall. I just think Hall's minutes are going to get limited because you've got a relatively short turnaround. You got to play Sunday at Purdue, and then you have a fairly long rest until you play Rutgers. And so I think they're just going to be a little more judicious about having him play minutes.
Yeah, I think reasonable. I think that's reasonable to expect.
So the other key things about the game, you know, Iowa's had an extra day of rest because their game against Northwestern got canceled. So they've actually hardly played in the last 11 days. They played one game, and they're going to have to play. They're really going to have a compressed because they've only played 8 games so far. Michigan State's already played 9. And so I think both teams will come in well rested, and they've had a chance to work on themselves, and we'll see if that makes a difference. Also, I think with this game, when it comes to Pierre Brooks, you know, his opportunities to get significant minutes. I mean, if Malik Hall starts playing, you got to imagine this sort of is like last chance to really make a good impression to make a case for staying on the court more. He'll have opportunities to score certainly, but it's going to be a tough defensive assignment to try to chase around these shooters. So, I mean, I think you'll, again, it's his opportunity.
Well, I don't know if Malik Hall plays, I don't know that he's going to have an opportunity. The reality is when Malik came back earlier, Pierre Brooks's minutes shrunk pretty substantially. You know, he has done nothing in the last couple of weeks to warrant continuing to get those opportunities.
Right.
So given that, you know, and we've seen MSU go different directions of what we were talking about. We've seen them go with Carson Cooper at the four. And I don't think there's been anything that's happened that's told them, well, that's not a legitimate option in limited minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. So even if you get Malik back and he's only playing, say, 15 minutes a night, I still think it's going to be hard. I'm Pierre. It's not to say Pierre's never going to see the floor, but he's going to have an incredibly short leash. And I think there are going to be games like, I'm trying to remember which game it was, where he played very, very limited minutes in a win. And it was just before Hall got re-injured. Maybe it was Wisconsin. And Izzo was lamenting, I should have gotten Malik in there a little bit more. But the fact is, he's got better options.
Right.
He's got guys that are playing. You know, if you've got Jaden Akins playing well, you got Malik Hall back and healthy. You know, Trey Holloman has at the very least earned your trust to, because of the way he defends and the way he takes care of the ball, that he'll continue to get minutes. Cooper and Kohler have continued to earn trust lately, increased levels of it. You know, now you're talking nine guys without Pierre that you're able to play and you have some degree of trust in. Does Michigan State really want to go much deeper than that? I think that there's a strong argument right now against that proposition. So I think it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be very hard for Pierre. He's going to have to show his only path is probably showing some things in practice or an extreme case of foul trouble for Michigan State where he steps up and just contributes in a big way. Those are his paths.
I think you're right. I guess I envision him having an opportunity with this, maybe the beginning game where Malik Hall just kind of has a few minutes that his first stint in, he's got to look good, right? He's got to be locked in defensively and rebound and stuff.
Yeah.
And so that will earn you more minutes throughout the game. If you lay an egg to start with, you're probably not going to see the floor again.
What's troubling about it is when you listen to Izzo, he's said this repeatedly and with growing insistence lately. He said he likes Pierre as a kid, as a person. And he believes in him. He believes that there is a very good player there. But he also says that Pierre is not doing the things he needs to do, not just in games, but in practice and on his own time. That's the troubling part. Because what you've heard all year long about a guy like Jackson Kohler, who, although at a different position, has some roughly similar issues, lack of innate athleticism, maybe not being in, you know, tip-top conditioning, somewhat similar between those two guys. But Izzo consistently has said, Jackson Kohler has a work ethic and he's doing everything he can to get better. And lo and behold, in his last two games, we've seen him really step up and contribute. And look, and even in the areas where he's weak, I'm not saying he's been perfect, but he looks better. You can see some improvement. Now, it's not going to be a linear path. I'm sure he's going to have ups and downs, and it might be a bumpy ride for him in this game. Who knows? But because of the way he works, he's going to continue to get opportunities. And that's where the difference is. And that's the unfortunate thing with where Pierre sits right now. And it's why I'm saying, I don't think he's going to see the same kinds of opportunities that he's been getting. Because if you're not showing the coach in practice and with your individual work that you're willing to do the things necessary to get better, then he's just not going to give you an opportunity if he has other options.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, the final thing I would say is I was coming in with Robrach is a solid center, but he's decent defensively, I think. But this is I think an opportunity with Jackson, you know, with his offensive skills he's shown the last few games.
Agreed.
This might be a game where you see them get some stuff going on inside the post. Maybe not with Mahdi specifically feeding him a lot in the post, but I wonder if you might see a little bit going on there for Michigan State being able to attack inside a little bit on Iowa.
Look, I think a couple things. I think one thing, you want to get Iowa in pick and roll, and that might be a way to spring Mahdi loose because Mahdi needs a comeback game. Mahdi's play has been at both ends has not been as good as, and even in terms of rebounding, he's just has not been as good as he was. So if you can get Iowa in some pick and roll stuff, you might be able to get some slip action on lobs to him, which would be good. But relative to Kohler, look, if you can score on the blocks against Trayce Jackson-Davis, you can do it against Filip Hrabacha.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I think at least on paper, this is a game where you could see some opportunities for Jackson.
Certainly when Mulvey comes in as well, right? I mean, I think there's opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. If they're playing Mulvey any kind of serious minutes off the bench, you got to attack him. Yeah, you know, and interestingly, you know, Iowa was one of the programs that had been recruiting Kohler heavily before MSU got involved. So there's probably some motivation both ways.
Yeah, right.
And you can see why. I think he'd be playing more at Iowa because Fran doesn't care about the defensive deficiencies. He'd just be living. I mean, Jackson, seriously, Jackson could be a double-digit scorer at Iowa if he'd gone there this year. That's possible. But he'd be no closer to having an effective pro career.
Right. And I think that's important to point out that, yeah, that's the other stuff that he's going to need to shore up before he has any opportunity to play, you know, in the United States as a professional.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, he went to the right place to try to do that.
Yeah.
And you're already seeing that. I think I'm not going to say it's fully bearing fruit, but I'll use the term from economics when a country is coming out of a recession. You can see some green shoots coming up. You can see a few blades of grass starting to pop up on that defensive plot of dirt that is Jackson Kohler's game, you know? And so that's a good sign.
Not yet the spring equinox, but we're getting there for Jackson. So good. Well, I think we'll kind of wrap it up there. Again, you know, if you have not had an opportunity to listen to Garrick Norman's interview, please check it out. If you've already downloaded on your podcast player, re-download it so you get the proper audio for that. And again, check out Nudge Printing, great Spartan apparel and other college apparel for either clothing or also decals for things like cornhole and your computer or your car. 24% discount at their website at nudgeprinting.com. Enter the coupon code Final Four. Until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go green.